Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke's fighting a war against recession, and in the last few months, he's been stepping up the offensive, cutting key interest rates three times so far this year, two of the cuts almost back-to-back last week, and bailing out big lenders and cash-strapped banks. It's all part of a fight to crush the credit crisis. But there's been a sort of unintended casualty in this war. The good old-fashioned dollar. Every time Bernanke blinks, it seems like the dollar takes to an all-time low. The yen, the euro, the pound, foreign currencies are enjoying unprecedented runs against the dollar these days. So what is the future of the good old-fashioned greenback? Are dead presidents headed for the global economy graveyard? To analyze the future of the dollar, you have to put it in perspective of its past. And someone who's done just that is Craig Carman, money and investing reporter for The Wall Street Journal and author of the new book, The Biography of the Dollar. Hi, Craig.
Good morning.
So on the cover of your book, you call it The Mighty Buck. Let's roll it back. When and why did the dollar become so mighty?
Well, the 20th century really marked sort of a coming out party for the dollar. At the start of that century, the U.S. was already the biggest economy in the world, one of the biggest trading countries in the world, and yet no one outside of North America used the dollar. The Federal Reserve Act was passed in 1913. World War I broke out the following year, and our European allies started borrowing money from the U.S. for the first time in dollars. And by the middle of the Second World War, or actually toward the end, 1944, with the Bretton Woods Agreement, the dollar was officially enshrined as the world's major currency, the only currency pegged to gold, with all other currencies pegged to the dollar. So in a span of just 44 years, it went from being used nowhere to being more widely used than any currency ever before it.
Well, one of the things that's interesting about your book, it says the dollar is under siege, which suggests that it's not the dollar's fault that it's declining. Why did you use the word under siege? Why that language?
In general, I'd say the main reason the dollar is under siege is it sort of peaked in its dominance during the 1990s. This was right at the end of the Cold War. The U.S. was this victorious superpower. There was no other superpower around. And you had all these new countries from the Eastern Bloc and Soviet client states that wanted to become capitalists. And they saw the dollar as their passport to this capitalist world. And so you had the dollar, which had already been the main currency of the free world, suddenly saw its use go up tremendously. And I think it was just a matter of time until the dollar was not so dominant over every other currency. In 1999, the advent of the euro meant that's the first credible alternative to the dollar. Emerging market nations sort of got their acts together, improved their economies, and are increasingly now borrowing in their own currencies, which means that they don't need to use the dollar as much as they did in the past. And you take all these factors and throw in the fact that the U.S. has been running very large trade deficits, running up unprecedented foreign debt, and the value of the dollar in the foreign exchange market has been falling. So with people finding fewer needs for it, and with its value decreasing, it appears to be under siege.
So that's why when I walk up and down Fifth Avenue, I just hear every possible language coming out of stores like Tiffany and Ferragamo and with large numbers of bags because people can just buy more based on our dollar.
In fact, you could say that New York City has been one of the biggest beneficiaries of the lower dollar because it is bringing tremendous amount of traffic, particularly from Europe.
You mentioned that it's been the past 6 years ago with the market behaving the way it has. Is this all cyclical?
Yeah, currency cycles are very cyclical. And in fact, currency cycles tend to last about 5 to 7 years. We're now in year number 6 of this one, which suggests that it could be ending, you know, any time, or it could go on for another year. When it turns, it could turn quite quickly, and it could be on a rally for a number of years afterwards.
All right, so maybe in the near future you want to plan a trip to Yellowstone Park, but not necessarily to Paris.
I think by 2009 you might be talking to your travel agent about Europe.
We're talking to Craig Carman. He has written a new book called The Biography of the Dollar, and I do want to get into some of the interesting details in your book. It's just an odd little detail, but you write about it fairly extensively. If you have dollars now that are just a mess, you can actually turn them in and get pristine dollars. Is that true?
Yeah, it's completely true. It's part of a division within the Treasury Department called the Bureau of Engraving and Printing, and they have a division within that large bureaucracy called the Mutilated Currency Division. And their entire raison d'etre is to receive mutilated, chewed on, stepped on, ripped up, spit out currency, try and reassemble the pieces together like a watchmaker putting together a fine watch, and then give the owner a check for the value of the currency as long as they receive 51% of a dollar bill. And they've had just some incredible stories. There was one woman who was in a sort of messy divorce proceedings with her husband and got very angry and sent $30,000 worth of his life savings through the shredder.
No, really?
he gathered it all together, sent it to the Bureau of Engraving and Printing's Mutilated Currency Division, and a few months later they gave him a check for that exact amount.
Some of the other stories in your book, they describe some of the people who have helped create the history of the dollar. But also, it's just there are just some amazing, mind-blowing facts in your book. Tell me a little bit about how many notes are produced annually, for example.
It's in the billions of dollars. I remember I walked into the Bureau of Engraving and Printing's storage room where they keep shrink wrap dollar bills before they're sent out into the world on trucks, usually at 4 a.m. to Federal Reserve banks and from there to the rest of the world. And they have what they call a brick, which is a stack of $100 bills with a total value of $400,000. You hold it up, and it's about the size of a fire log. It's amazing to think you could hold $400,000 in your hand. It's not much different than holding a newborn baby, at which point I asked them if I could hold another log of this $400,000 worth of notes, and they gave that to me, and suddenly I was holding $800,000 in my hand. That didn't feel very heavy either, so I said, can I hold another one so I can know what it feels like to hold $1 million in my hands, at which point they looked at me a little funny and decided that we should move on to another room in the store.
In the United States right now, who is the single most important person when it comes to, let's say, strengthening the weak dollar?
Well, I think it's the person you mentioned at the top of the show. It's Ben Bernanke. And the dilemma for Mr. Bernanke is he seems to have prioritized, as perhaps he should, unfreezing the credit crisis and preventing the U.S. from going into a long recession. And to do that, he's cutting interest rates and trying to increase bank lending and other type of lending. And as you noted, the problem with that is the dollar is sort of collateral damage to that. Now, at one point when the Federal Reserve feels that the economy has bottomed and that the credit crisis has reached its worst point and is starting to improve, then he would be able to raise interest rates. And when he does that, that will be a time, almost certainly, when the dollar will start to appreciate in value again.
Craig Carman, money and investing reporter for The Wall Street Journal and author of The Biography of the Dollar. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, don't go anywhere. Coming up next on the show, politics did not take a holiday this weekend. New Mexico Governor Bill Richardson hitched his wagon to Barack Obama. Clinton still leads in Pennsylvania, and John McCain was in Baghdad and a little trip to Europe as well. The Weekend in Politics with Politico.com's John Harris. Plus, of course, our daily ramble through the news.
One man got a ticket for dunking Oreos while driving. We'll explain. Stay with us here on the Bryant Park Project from NPR News.